Don't be a fool, Ace. Trust nothing they say. Follow the money, make them all pay. Under a headline, over a beer, truth plainly told is what they most fear. Deadlines and dreamers someday we'll meet down at the dark end of Burb Street. You're listening to KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. My name is Dan Gowerthy, and I'm joined by my colleague,
Tom Nato.
And the program you're tuned into is Left Turn on Bird Street. Thanks for joining us today. Our program has heard every other Saturday from 9 a.m. till 11 a.m. And we also like to say our show is also heard on three other fine radio stations, including KQRP 106.1 FM in Salida, California, and WCVR 97.1 FM in Cherry Ridge, Pennsylvania, and our newest affiliate, WYQZ at 96.7 FM in Bealeton, Virginia. Thanks for joining us today. We certainly appreciate it. Also like to remind you that our program is heard on the internet via the KRBS website at Live365, and I know for a fact that we have listeners, Tom, this morning tuned in
from Los Angeles area. Well,
Los Angeles and Elk Grove, California.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Your family's listening.
The family's listening.
This may be the first time for him.
They got up early enough to listen to me. So thanks, kids, for listening to us. I certainly appreciate it. And we'd also like to invite you to take a look at our internet site. It's located at www.ltobs.blogspot.com, or you can simply Google us at LTOBS and we come up at the top of your queue. Or if you want to type in Left Turn on Bird Street, we'll also come up that way. So in any case, thanks. Go ahead.
Also, to listen to the show, you can link from our website, or you can go to the RBS. How do we do it?
Radio Bird Street.
www.radiobirdstreet.org. There's a listen button there you can push.
Yes.
And listen to us and the guests we may have today.
Yeah, and it's pretty easy. We will have a guest at 9:30. In the meantime, if you're listening to us anyplace, and you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at area code 530-534-1200. And we also have a guest this hour, in our first hour. And do you want to introduce our guest, Tom? Who
sure.
Will be in about half an hour?
Our news interview today is with John Burton, who a Pasadena attorney who was one of the more legitimate of the 130-plus candidates who ran for governor.
Wait. You mean Gary Coleman wasn't legitimate?
Well, you know, I had my doubts. My doubts, yes. Okay. You know, that man has refused to grow an inch taller. And I think there's a conspiracy behind that. Anyway, he ran in the replace Governor Gray Davis election, which led to Arnold Schwarzenegger becoming governor.
You girly men out there, you listen to Left Turn on Bird Street or I come and beat you up.
Please, no snickering.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, so we'll be talking to him about some matters that involve the World Socialist website and the Socialist Equality Party and his own aspirations and doings.
Yes, Tom refers several stories. Tom's a regular visitor of that story, and because of Tom, I read several of the stories there, and it's a very well written. Their contributors are very good writers, very thorough in their investigative reporting.
More importantly, it's well edited.
Yes, exactly. It's well edited.
No typos.
You know, I meant to tell you on our drive up this morning. You know, everybody's prone to it, and the story I asked you to print for me from Mother Jones, and this is a common thing that I do when I'm typing. Thinking, dating myself here. I'm not keyboarding. I'm typing. Now that's a whole other story. But they had somebody's name in there, and it was Brian. Now I can't remember what it was. Brian Jones. But on their website, they had it Brain Jones. I mean, You know, I can relate to that. I do that constantly. You know, that I and the A, you know, they, you know, you get ahead of yourself and boom, Brian becomes Brain. So maybe his name is Brain. Who knows?
Or maybe they're thinking, this guy's a Brain. We're glad to have him on.
Yeah, it could be in either case. Of course, so we got a lot to talk about this morning, and oh yeah, what's this? Oh yeah, the first thing we want to talk about before we get to, you know, Tom, I kind of felt bad at work yesterday. My boss said I won a grand prize there. You know what the grand prize was?
A trip out of town.
Yeah, and it was a hunting trip with Dick Cheney. So. Shows you how much they like me over there. And they say, here, wear this black thing, you know, this, or wear this camouflage. You'll blend in real well with the background.
Better to
there.
Be disguised as a bird.
Yeah, right. Well, the first item before we get, we may not get to Dick Cheney just yet, but we're going to talk about Dick Cheney
at length sometime
during the course of today's two-hour program. First thing we want to talk about is a person in Ohio who you may or may not be familiar with. His name is Paul Hackett. And Paul Hackett is a, I'm not sure if he's actually retired, but he was a Marine Corps major who was recruited by the Democratic Party last year to run in a special election for a House seat that was vacated in Hamilton County, which is in the Cincinnati area of southern Ohio. The district was a very traditionally heavily conservative Republican district. The Democratic Party in Ohio recruited Hackett to run for the special election. And Hackett damn near won the seat. He drew about 48% of the vote.
Having some experience in elections, there's a good possibility many of the people thought they were voting for Bobby Hackett, the comedian.
Yeah, right. Or, but no, Buddy Hackett, you mean.
Buddy Hackett, yeah.
Right. Anyhow, oh, geez, I'm getting some terrible feedback here.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Well, I hope it's not going over there. Is it going over there? Hope not. Anyhow.
Marianne, call us in.
Yeah, if you hear that, Tom, you know, before we get to Hackett, maybe the NSA is wiretapping us.
Well, it could be. Aren't they listening to everybody?
They're listening to everybody and everything. And even though we're just a couple of small guys, we are behind the microphones and where our voices are being carried around the world. So we pose
a
threat.
I've been wondering about that. The way things are going politically in the United States, because this is a two-host show, Tom and Dan, Dan and Tom, does that make a conspiracy?
Oh, yeah. There's two of us meeting.
Meeting.
We could get in trouble. Uh-oh. You hear that beeping noise, Tom?
That's the garbage truck.
They're coming to get us. They really are. The garbage truck. Anyhow, let's get back to Paul Hackett. Just as a little background, Paul Hackett was recruited by the Democratic Party last year to run against, I can't remember the lady's name who actually won the seat. I'll find it here in a minute. This is the same lady who basically disrespected John Murtha on the floor of the Congress.
And then took it back.
And then took it back after she realized, oh, this guy actually did serve in the Marines. He did
seal battle.
But he was recruited to run against in a special election in Congress in Hamilton County, Ohio, which is part of Cincinnati, a traditionally very conservative Republican district, damn near won the race. So he basically ran on the premise of being a anti-Iraq war veteran who said we need to pull out. And that was his basic message. It resonated with the voters there, not enough, but it was quite a good showing. So subsequent to that, Hackett decided that he would run for the next Senate seat coming up in this year's election against Republican Mike DeWine in November. And DeWine himself has a very strong challenger. And DeWine is viewed by the Democratic national leadership, and this is where the story kind of gets interesting, as being vulnerable. They could pick up a seat in Ohio, which would, you know, bring their tally in the Senate up by one, assuming they lose no other seats and hold everything they have. Well, lo and behold, Hackett starts campaigning, and to make a long story short, the Democratic leadership basically sabotaged him because one of their insiders, Akron Democrat Sherrod Brown, and I'm reading from a story in Battle Room. It's called Backroom Battles from MotherJones.com. Let me just read a little bit. Hackett was running against, this would be in the primary, against seven-term Akron Democrat Representative Sherrod Brown in a May primary, with the winner going on to face two-term Republican Senator Mike DeWine in November. DeWine is considered one of the most vulnerable incumbent Republicans, and the National Democratic Party is pulling out all the stops to defeat him. But first, the Democrats had to get Hackett out of the way. The weapons used in the rub-out included economic sabotage, whisper campaigns, and threats. Now, to me, isn't that sound like Karl Rove, what Karl Rove did to John McCain in South Carolina going back to 2000?
It certainly does.
Whisper campaigns in particular.
But you know what this also bears a striking resemblance to?
What's that?
Is the operations of the DLC.
Exactly.
The people who sabotaged Kerry or used Kerry to sabotage candidates that actually might win.
Right. And, you know, it's really a shame.
DLC stands for Democratic Leadership Council, I think it is.
Right.
And they're the ones that are working to save a seat in the presidency open for Hillary.
Right. And it's really a shame because this is a person who, Paul Hackett, and to be honest with you, I don't know all of his positions, but this is a guy who basically came out of nowhere. He was active in party politics. He ran a really good campaign, damn near won the seat, and he decides based on that he's going to run for Senate. And you know the way they, you know, there's whisper campaigns that he was behind the death squads in Iraq, unsubstantiated. Yeah, that's part of it. Excuse me. But you know how they really basically pulled the plug on this guy?
No.
A lot of prominent Democrats, some that even surprised me, some of the usual suspects like Chuck Schumer and Harry Reid.
Nancy Pelosi.
But this one really surprised me, Representative Henry Waxman from Los Angeles.
Really?
Yeah. He even said, he basically wrote, Waxman being he, wrote letters to contributors basically saying, we don't think this guy is going to win, so cut off your funding to him.
Has Waxman confirmed that that letter actually came from his office?
He hasn't denied it, and I read through the story. You know, but the point is the party insiders basically saw that this guy was a threat to the establishment. He was good enough to run as a long shot and damn near win that congressional seat last year, and as an aside note, he vowed not to run run re-election for that Congress, or to run up against for that seat he ran against last year, and he's staying with his word, so he's not going to re-enter that race for Congress based on giving his word that he would only run for Senate. But he was basically forced out by the Democratic insiders. Now, this sounds to me almost like he might as well and this is the point you've long argued on this show, Tom, that the term Democrat and Republican are so interchangeable.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
What's interesting about this, it seems to me, is that his problem was that he spoke the truth in short, blunt statements, and people liked it. He was very popular. And that is not a good thing to do, tell the truth.
No, it's not. It's, you know, not a good thing.
Or speak your mind, the actual facts that are on your mind.
It's not a good thing in politics to tell the truth because, you know, as you all know, the truth is, you know, we can't tell the truth. That's what politicians say because they're protecting their own hide, basically. And this guy...
Well, actually, the question they ask, and I've sat in meetings where this happens, how will that play?
Yeah, right. How will that play?
If I tell the truth, how will that play? Would it work better if I said this? Or, please, sir, what should I say? How will that... Oh, that'll play better.
Well, you know, this comes on the back of, and this is where, you know, I'm very discouraged about the political process. This comes on the back of what happened with the Alito nomination. They could have, the Senate, they had the votes, they could have, if they had any will whatsoever, you know, to filibuster Alito. And, you know, the only difference between, in my opinion, between Alito and Bork, who, you know, they tried to get on the Supreme Court 19 years ago, is that Alito is a little bit softer. He wasn't as combative, but he has the same judicial philosophy. But they didn't show any backbone. And
you may remember this better than I do, but mm-hmm. when they were doing the confirmation of Roberts,
uh-huh.
right, there was talk of a filibuster, mm-hmm. and there were some reports in the news that the Republicans called the Democrats in and said, if you do that, we'll hang out some of your dirty linen, mm-hmm. and we'll also change the law that filibusters can't be held,
right.
or something along those lines.
Right.
And I'm wondering if they were so... Hello, can you hear me? Oh, anyway, that they were so frightened by that previous threat that they just folded on Alito for that same reason without mentioning it.
Well,
it
could be. I mean, this episode with Hackett points to just, you know, once these politicians get inside the beltway, you know, they all become really the same. It's just who's paying them, and you know where their dirty laundry and dirty money is really coming from. And I was very disappointed when they didn't filibuster Alito, because you know when Roberts was nominated for the Supreme Court, he was replacing Rehnquist, so they're going to replace a conservative with a conservative. But when O'Connor left, they're replacing a moderately conservative O'Connor with a very conservative Alito.
Well, I can tell you one thing, is if Jimmy Stewart was still alive, he'd refuse to play in this movie.
I know it. Oh, geez. But, you know, the whole thing points to is that I think the Democrats are, on several different levels, they're not really standing up for things. And it goes back to your point that you've long said, Tom, for as long as I've known you, is that they're really not that much difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. And this, I think these two cases, to me anyhow, and to a lot of people, I'm seeing it more and more on blogs and the internet. People are really progressives are really becoming disgusted with the Democrats. The Democratic Party's lack of principle of standing up for what the people within the party that support them—they're like the Republicans—they're just looking out for the money.
Walter Karp has written about this sort of situation in a couple of books, the titles of which I can't pull up from my memory at the moment. But anyway, Walter Karp, and essentially the agreement is between the two parties. It's unspoken, or it's certainly not publicized. Is that, hey, look, if you'll keep us in, we'll keep you in.
Right. Well, I think that's a quid pro quo kind of system, yeah, I guess.
And I think we've beaten that one to death.
But, you know, let me say one last thing, and I'll beat...
Okay, last word.
Last word is that the Democrats are failing to listen to what the people that support them want, not necessarily the people with the money. And as we sit here in late February, and when we go into November, they're going to get their asses beat. I would bet on it, because they have so many golden opportunities. They have the Abramoff thing. They have the war in Iraq. They have billions of dollars missing. They have they have so many issues that they can use. And you know what? They're just sitting on their hands, and they're not listening to their constituents. And I think people like myself, or you, or a lot of other people, I'm sensing this, are going to sit on their hands, or they're going to vote for a third party, or they're not going to participate come November, and they're going to lose if the elections aren't rigged to start with, which is a whole other subject. But they're going to lose big time in November, because they're not seizing on the opportunities that presented themselves. And these two are good examples. They're not opportunities, but they're examples of how they're operating.
Well, that's because candidates from the Democratic Party or any party, the theme now is not what do you think, it's what can I do for you.
Right, what can I do for you? So,
or what can you do for me, too?
Yeah, you're right. We beat that dead horse. I'd like to remind our listeners, you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street, and our program is heard every other week. We broadcast from KRBS 107.1 in Oroville, California. And our program is also heard on KQRP 106.1 FM in Salida, California, WCRV 97.1 in Cherry Ridge, Pennsylvania, and WYQZ 96.7 FM in Bealeton, Virginia. Thanks for tuning us in. We certainly appreciate it. And also encourage you to take a look at our blog at www.lto.com. bs.blogspot.com. And as we said earlier, our program is also heard on the internet on Live 365.
Also, we do take calls in, but not when the guest is on speaking, because we only have one line coming into the studio.
Right.
So we can't pick you up.
We can't pick you up. You'll get a busy tone, and you know, you won't be able to participate.
Afterwards.
Afterwards, if you want to call us, by all means do so. Our area, or our phone number, is area code 530-534-1200, and you can give us a call. Now, Tom, what time is our interview scheduled for?
9:30.
Well, shall we take a brief musical break?
Well, I have one.
Got something?
Okay, well, yeah, ahead. I do have. Well, this is a short item that I want to mention, because this actually makes me sad. Now, I usually try to put the happy news up front and the sad news at the back.
Right.
But this is sad.
Go ahead.
Is from the Seattle Times. It's an economic story, and I think they ripped it off actually from the Dallas Morning News. It says Radio Shack's troubles deepened Friday as the electronics retailer announced it would close up to 10% of its 7,000 stores after a report of weak fourth quarter earnings.
Wow.
Now, that's one of the stories I really like. I go there and that may be the only good store in Marysville, California.
You do have an affinity for Radio Shack. You know,
everything I own, you know.
You've kind of got me into it. You know, we went there on Christmas Eve Santa Claus went there on Christmas Eve, bought a little great little racetrack there, spur of the moment purchase.
Apparently, the president and chief executive, David Edmondson, also apologized to investors over misstatements in his resume. Turns out that he claimed to have graduated from college, and apparently he did not.
They're based in Dallas. Is
right.
he in a relationship to former FEMA director Michael Brown? Oh, that's all.
No, but my question is there anybody who lives in Texas who is honest?
Well, you know, Molly Ivins.
Okay, I'll give her that. She
Bill
saved
Moyers.
The whole state.
Bill Moyers.
Oh, I didn't know. Oh,
yeah,
he's got
a Texan.
I thought he was from, like, Alabama or something.
No,
like
he's
that.
A Texan. He's from the Hill Country.
Oh, okay.
He was a Johnson boy from the Hill Country, man.
Anyway, they're going to close that many stores, and, you know, I'm sure Marysville, where I live, is one of the lower-end stores, so it's gone.
It's
and
gone. They're going to 86 that store. You
have to drive over to Yuba City now.
You're going to have to go across the river, across the bridge, over to the big city of Yuba City. Or some people, Yuba City.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That's too bad. You know, I do like, you know, actually, we've got a lot of equipment for our show when, you know, on the occasion we record it from the Radio Shack. And those guys are quite knowledgeable and quite helpful. And it's too bad that they're going to close 700 stores.
There's a guy over there that really helps me out on the technical stuff. But you know what? I would appreciate a Save the Radio Shack move even more than I would Save the Whales.
Okay, well, you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street, and we're going to take a very short break. And when we come back, we're going to have our guest, Attorney John Burton from Pasadena, California. And for you California political junkies, this is not the same John Burton of Bay Area political fame, or his brother,
John
I guess.
L. Burton. I don't know if there's any family connection. I didn't ask that. But
right.
John L. Burton was in the legislature. This is not a different John. This is John C. John Christopher Burton, a lawyer in Pasadena who works on various issues he's going to tell us about.
Very good. Well, we're going to listen to a little bit of one of Detroit's favorites, Aretha Franklin.
Aretha.
What a voice she has. Anyhow, we'll be back in just a minute, and you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street.
Without a word of warning, the blues walked in this morning and circled around my lonely room. I didn't know why I had that sad and lonely feeling until my baby said, yesterday, this time I sang a love song.
in the blue. It just goes to show you, no matter how you love, everybody's got to lose. And since I've lost, I'd rather walk around and worry. I guess I'll just walk the darkest avenue. My story's a little different, people. I'm singing the blues. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now it strikes me kind of funny how love can be this way. Today, and it strikes me kind of funny, yeah, how fate can be so unfair. 'Cause I seem to come out on the losing end. Every love affair, yeah, it's got to be somewhere from you. Mm-hmm. But I should be the one.
You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street on KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. My name is Dan Gowerty, and I co-host this show with my colleague,
Tom Nato.
Thanks for joining us this morning. And as promised, we are ready to have our interview. And Tom, why don't you introduce who our guest is this morning?
Well, that would be John Christopher Burton. He prefers John Burton, and I don't blame him because that's too long to write out. He's a Pasadena attorney who was one of the more legitimate, as I said before, of the 130-plus candidates who ran for governor in the recall-replace Governor Gray Davis election back a few years ago, only to lose out to Arnold Schwarzenegger, only to have California to lose out to him, too. The are you there, Mr. Burton?
Yep, let's.
Thank you for having me.
Great, go ahead.
Oh, sure, be glad to. First of all, I was asking you before, I learned about you through, I was referred to you by people from the World Socialist website and the Socialist Equality Party, and you're a candidate, or have been a candidate, in California, which doesn't even recognize the Socialist Equality Party. Can you tell us who you are and what you do and why you ran for governor? What's your social position or what's your political position?
Sure, thank you. I'm professionally an attorney. I specialize in representing victims of police misconduct. My office is in Pasadena. Politically, I'm a member of the Socialist Equality Party. and I was the party's candidate for governor in the 2003 recall election. I'm also a writer for the party's website, which publishes every day except for Sunday, and is found on the World Wide Web at wsws.org.
The are you listening on online to yourself?
No, I'm not.
Okay, because there's a little bit of breakup, not too much, but we want to get you as clear as we can. The what is the Socialist Equality Party?
The Socialist Equality Party is a national party. It's affiliated with an international party called the International Committee of the Fourth International. And we're a party which seeks to develop a political alternative within the working population to what we consider to be the political stranglehold of the two big business parties, the Democrats and the Republicans.
California, last I heard, is the sixth largest economy in the world, the largest in the United States, certainly, and that large in the world. What are the key economic issues and social issues and political issues facing the nation and California, and therefore, because we're so big, the world?
Well, California, as we said in the 2003 campaign, is really a concentrated expression of all the tendencies that are developing in the world right now. We are focused on three issues, the first of which is the wars of imperialist aggression and plunder that the United States is waging, particularly right now in Iraq and Afghanistan. Also, what is in fact a worldwide attack on democratic rights, also here in the United States. And finally, I think what's more particular to the California situation, the growth of social inequality, the really obscene concentration of wealth in a small financial oligarchy, while the social programs and wages and living conditions of the broad masses of the working population are being decimated.
There's a group called the neocons, or the new conservatives. Is this the new Gilded Age in America?
Well, obviously there's parallels between what is going on now and what happened at the turn of the century. With the Gilded Age, so I don't think that's an unfair.
The Gilded Age is when Carnegie's and all the very rich dominated the 1880 through 1910, when the wealthy could basically have the, at their will, have the poor people swiped off Park Avenue to make life even easier and more attractive for themselves. It's the Gilded Age was when everybody was rich, or at least when people paid attention only to the rich.
Well, there's certainly parallels, and also I think during that same period of time was the first development of U.S. imperialism, with the first the Spanish-American War, obviously, and then with the intervention into World War One.
Also, at that time earlier on, the invasion of the Philippines and other places like that.
Yeah, that's correct.
John, this is Dan. You know, one kind of theory I've had, and I've voiced this several times on our program, is until the United States, I was about to say enjoys, but that's not the right word, endures some sort of catastrophic event, much like we did during the Depression, will people really begin to wake up? What's your view? I mean, what will it take for the average American to wake up to see what is happening to them, just not even from a social point of view, but from an economic point of view? And, I mean, do you agree, or what do you think is necessary to make people wake up and see that their economic power and their status is day by day being diminished by the government that we have set up?
Well, I think one of the great myths in contemporary society is that the American people and the population at large is not aware of what is happening. Opinion polls, for example, show that 58% of the American population think the impeachment of Bush should be referred to Congress for investigation. It's the big business-dominated media which seeks to speak for public opinion that actually speaks for the same small financial oligarchy that distorts really what the consciousness of of the population is. But we do see that and there's another point you're making that's very important, that when there are catastrophes, when there are certain events like Hurricane Katrina and its fallout, that pulls the mask off of American society, shows what the real state of social relations is, and tends to cause people to develop their own understanding at a much quicker rate than perhaps happens in between those kind of events.
I agree with you your position on the corporate control of the media. And my theory has long been that until it hits somebody, people might be willing to go along, be willing accomplices, if you will, as long as it doesn't, affect them and they still have a house and they still have a job, even if their economic, their buying power is diminished. But I've long felt that and I don't want to see it happen necessarily, that something along the lines of the Great Depression, because if you look historically, the Great Depression was really a turning point where we went from kind of the end of the Gilded Age to a more socially progressive, some of the policies from the Roosevelt administration gave us things like Social Security. And do you think that even though 58% of the people agree that Bush should be impeached, do you think there'll be any call for them, or will they not do it until something happens to their own personal lot in life?
Well, we think that the economy is headed in a catastrophic direction. Certainly the growth of the balance of payments, the growth of the budget deficit, the growth of social equality, these are not sustainable trends. How that's going to work out, whether it's going to work out in the 1930s-style depression or not, we don't have a crystal ball, but we do know that it's going to create a deepening crisis that the financial elite is going to attempt to shoulder onto the backs of the working population as a whole, and that as people lose their health care, as they lose their libraries, as they lose their public lands, as they lose the environment, as they lose access to decent schools, as they lose their homes, they will be forced to look to political alternatives, which are simply not presented to them by either the Democrat or the Republican Party.
But, it's as if the American people are refusing to see what's going on. You are, you mentioned that you are an attorney that works in the area of police brutality. I've covered trials in which the evidence was so clear that of police brutality, but the jury would refuse to see it. I mean, I covered one trial where a mentally retarded person spoke up to a police officer who came to the, he was on his front yard, and somebody, he was acting funny because he didn't get his medication. Officer came, confrontation started, other officers were called in, bed him down on the ground, subdued. His parents had come by and saying, he's mentally retarded, he hasn't his medication, and they shot him 3 times in the chest and once in the head and killed him. The jury then found no wrongdoing. That was a jury that represented a lot of America. They did not want to see power contested. Is there any chance that the SEP and us can ever prevail over that sort of public attitude?
Well, actually, I've had a few trials like that in my own 25-year career, so I know exactly what you're talking about. The development of a higher level of political consciousness in the working population as a whole is a very difficult, protracted struggle. It's not going to be easy. However, we do have a certain advantage that the other side doesn't have, which is that we're basing our perspective on what is really going on in the world, on what are scientifically